Welcome to Federal Insights Identity Access Management Month, sponsored by SailPoint. Now here's your host, Tom Timmon.
Few efforts are more crucial to improving cybersecurity and privacy than the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, a project at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. I spoke with Mike Garcia, program manager for NSTIC. He said a major push in the past year has focused on the effectiveness of new ID technologies.
It's been a pretty exciting year in 2016. We started off the year in January by hosting a workshop on really trying to make some progress in one of the things we're really focusing on now, which is advancing measurement in identity. And, of course, NIST is well known for its work in measuring all sorts of things. One thing that we in information technology more generally and certainly in identity have not had as much success with thus far, as young a field as it is when you really think about it, is measuring the strength of how we're doing things. And so one of the things that we've really had a lot of success on, we think this year, is advancing that, exactly the ability to say, well, how good of a job are you doing if you're using a fingerprint versus a password? We're pretty sure that there are better security features. We know that they accomplish slightly different things, but the ability for us to really move forward and measure things in a meaningful way, we think is really important for being able to do risk management in the appropriate way.
Yeah, you have an effort called SOFA, Strength of Function for Authenticators Framework, not to be confused with Status of Forces Agreement.
That's right.
And what goes into something like SOFA? How do you measure the strength of a solution for identification or authentication?
Yeah, overloaded as an acronym, it may be. It's still one of our favorites. For any given type of authenticator, it could be different. So our goal is to actually have a suite of SOFA documents over the course of years. The one we have had for some time is SOFA for secrets or passwords more generally, where it's very easy to measure the entropy of, say, going from 11 characters to 12 characters or requiring a special character. From a cryptographic point of view, it's very easy to measure how much stronger a password is by how much longer it would take to attack it and brute force your way to guessing what the password is. Much more difficult when you think about it in what we're currently working on, which is SOFA-B, or for biometrics. So how is it that you go about measuring the entirety of the biometric process and saying, well, if you use this sensor and this mechanism for transmitting that data and this mechanism for storing the template either locally or on a server, how secure is it relative to, say, this approach? And then ultimately what we'd like to be able to do is compare between different dash items in the suite. Say, well, if you're doing fingerprints this way or iris scans this way, fingerprint might be better than iris scan in this case, or that fingerprint might be better than password. And so at least for the case of biometrics and what we're working on right now, the real gain here is about trying to develop the entirety of that biometric function. So you think about having where your fingerprints, you know, how much of we're used to secrets and passwords, and this is very different. So with biometrics, we leave our fingerprints in hundreds of places every day, every time we touch a elevator button or an escalator railing or something like that. So we can't think of it as a secret in the same sort of way. What really matters is that we trust the device that we presented that biometric to as being a known device, that we prove that you're there doing it and it's not someone replaying your fingerprint that they lifted off of something else. It's a very different approach to measuring whether that whole system of presenting a biometric is really accomplishing the task that it's supposed to and really has the strength that it's supposed to.
And when you come up with the SOFA measurements, who can use those? That is to say, can someone like Apple or Samsung that has thumbprint readers on their phones, that kind of thing?
Right. So actually, NIST for years, in conjunction with other federal agencies, has been working on biometric measurements, but in a very controlled environment, in the sense of showing up and taking your fingerprints for enrolling for a PIV card for federal employees, for instance. So if you are doing that, we have ways of measuring the devices that we would procure as government to take those fingerprints and then compare them to previous fingerprints. What we really are trying to move in this space is to something where it's a more standardized approach, where independent laboratories outside of NIST would be able to take a framework that we developed as a measurement framework and conduct testing on consumer products. and be able to say that an Apple or Samsung or whatever else may be showing up in the market, whether it's performing at a level that meets the needs of either federal agencies for particular purposes or for in the consumer space and within industry. So we really want to, we're seeing that market of biometrics take a foothold. We want to enable the market to be able to make better decisions based on the risk that's truly being mitigated.
We're speaking with Mike Garcia. He's director of the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace program at NIST. What form will the final SOFA ratings, if you will, take?
So what we would provide at NIST wouldn't be to actually conduct any ratings for products, but would be to provide a framework for how you go about conducting the measurements. So what should, say, it would probably look something like a matrix of different measurements, that there are, say, 9 components of this particular biometric system. How does we would provide the framework by which a laboratory could report that, well, we tested this product and or this system based on these products, and here is how the rating came out in category 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
So I sense a special publication coming out of all this.
In time. We currently have a white paper that's out and available for comment on our website, and that eventually will probably turn into what we call a NIST-er or a NIST interagency report, and eventually is these things become more mature, we typically move them into a special publication as kind of that statement that this is a document that really is, has meaningfully matured, and we're at a point now where agencies ought to be following it.
Mike Garcia is Program Manager of the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace at NIST. More of the interview in just a moment. I'm Tom Temin.
Go beyond the PIV card and secure your agency with Identity Governance. Security doesn't stop at the front door. You need better visibility and governance over who has access to what systems and data in your agency. SailPoint, the leader in identity governance, helps your agency better mitigate risk and move it forward securely and confidently. Visit them at SailPoint.com to learn more. That's SailPoint.com. SailPoint, the power of identity.
Several million people are testing new ways to identify and authenticate themselves online. They're guinea pigs in one of several pilot programs launched by the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace, a project at the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Mike Garcia is program manager of the NSTIC, and earlier I got an update from him on this crucial effort.
This is the fifth round in which we've awarded pilots over just over 4 years now. We had, in 2016, we really saw what we'd hope to see, which is, you know, I kind of think about the pilots on a technology-shaped S-curve for adoption. And, you know, those first couple years are really trying to build up that initial little bubble. And then you start climbing up that curve. And this year we grew from just over 2 million individuals impacted to, at last count of September 30th, over 6.7 million individuals impacted by our pilots program. So that scaling is really starting to happen. This year in August, we announced those 6 new pilots that you mentioned. Across 2 different scopes. The first one was a pilot that we awarded in healthcare to help bring federated identity into healthcare. And so that's the ability for you essentially to, both on the provider side and as a patient, to be able to access information across multiple different sources without having to have multiple different credentials and go to multiple different portals. This is a problem that's very difficult and has been very vexing for a lot of healthcare applications, yet has this critical importance of being able to see in context all of your healthcare information in one place.
Yes, because for the average person, every different provider you go for, you've got a different form and a different authentication system. And so it sounds like what you're trying to do is switch the authentication from something held by the provider to something held by the person that is useful wherever he or she goes.
That's right. That's one side of it, as far as an individual's right not just to access to their information in some way, shape, or form, but to ready access to all of their information, we think is fundamental to improving care. The other side of it is on the provider side, that as a doctor or a nurse who's looking at your file, there it is not helpful if only 75% of your records are there. You could have been to a doctor the day before, and if they're not in the same provider network, you may not be able as a doctor to see that information there in the same place. And, of course, those decisions that are made in context with interactions between medications and with different protocols of treatment, it's extremely important to have that full context. And so instead, I'm going back to the, as a provider, back to the patient and hoping that they're able to provide me with full information, in a very brief conversation. And so it's much better if you can provide all of these things up front without creating an extra burden on doctors and nurses to be able to access multiple systems and see multiple records and, in their head, put them together and make the relevant decisions.
What did that pilot look like?
So it's early in the project, of course. It's only a couple months in now since the launch, but we're really expecting to see multiple providers at different hospitals that essentially are making referrals to another provider, potentially outside of network, but that all of the information that came prior to that referral goes with the referral to the new provider as well. Of course, at the same time, you're managing who has access to that information so that, you don't have people seeing it that shouldn't see it, and that, the time bounding of access to that information is all privacy protecting as well.
And who's involved in a pilot like that? How many entities would be part of it?
So we typically, as with all of our pilots, it for us, it's really about partnerships. We've at this point awarded 24 pilots, but the number we're actually more proud of is that in those pilots, we've had more than 170 total partners. And so it really is about building out this network of organizations that are taking an approach, a different approach to digital identity. In this case, we have at least one hospital and two separate providers, and we're hoping to expand that by the end of the pilot.
And beyond the healthcare pilot, what are some of the other ones that are exciting?
So that was one pilot, one of the pilots that we awarded. The other five were for state and local government services. In this case, it was almost all states. And they range significantly in what they're providing. Some of them are providing identity proofing that's tax-related, so an ability to come in and better proof your identity for tax purposes so that you can prevent access not only to past records, but also an creating a way to stop adversaries from essentially coming in and fraudsters from coming in and filing taxes before you have a chance to, and having your refund sent to the wrong place so that they can cash in on it before you're even ready to file your own taxes, ranging all the way up to digital identity and digital ID cards, digital driver's licenses, I should say, that are that provide a different level of privacy. So one of the things about the way that we're very used to working in everyday life is, you go somewhere that you're trying to buy an age-restricted item, alcohol, go to an R-rated movie, something on those lines, and you have to show your driver's license. So that's nice in the sense that when I show someone my driver's license, the DMV that issued me my driver's license doesn't know that I'm going to buy alcohol or that I'm purchasing an age-restricted item or going to a movie that's age-restricted. There's no connection back to the DMV, but the movie theater or the store that I'm purchasing this item at is able to get the relevant information, which is my age. But they also see my name and my address and my birth date. And lots of things that they don't need to know when all they need to know is that I'm over a certain age. And so what we're hoping to do with this digital driver's license approach is that you would actually on your smartphone have a digital driver's license that you're able to assert claims on. So, for instance, your picture would show up on the screen if you were to tap your phone on something that looked very similar to the things that we now pay with our phones on credit card readers. Your picture might show up on a screen with a check mark that says that you're over 21, and that's it. They don't know your name. They don't know where you live. Some young lady walks into a bar, and rather than having to reveal a whole bunch of personal information and sensitive information to a bartender, all she has to do is tap this phone and see that there's a picture and there's a check mark, and that's it. And so those are the sorts of technologies. One of that is the digital driver's license pilot that we're is part of this set of pilots is a very interesting one from that perspective. A couple of the other ones involve access to Health and Human Services. So for instance, in the state of Florida, access to payments for child support, for alimony, that again are able to prove identity without revealing information. So in many cases, you might have someone that is paying child support or alimony that you don't want them to know the recipient's address, or you want to keep that information private. And so, but that is, may also be an individual that knows an awful lot about the other party.
Sure.
Because, of course, they may have been married to them at one point. And so ways that you can not only proof both individuals' identities, but that you can provide information on, say, where to send a check or how to make a deposit or things like that without revealing anything to the other party and proofing them in a mm-hmm. way that that the other party, even though they know an awful lot about them, is not able to spoof and is not able to pretend to be them.
Mike Garcia is Program Manager of the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace at NIST. I'm Tom Temin.
Go beyond the PIV card and secure your agency with identity governance. Security doesn't stop at the front door. You need better visibility and governance over who has access to what systems and data in your agency. SailPoint, the leader in identity governance, helps your agency better mitigate risk and move it forward securely and confidently. Visit them at SailPoint.com to learn more. That's SailPoint.com. SailPoint, the power of identity.
We're speaking with Mike Garcia, Director of the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace Program at NIST. And as the pilots proceed and you learn how well they work and what some of the weaknesses are, what happens to the pilots over time?
Yeah, we've always taken the position that some pilots are going to fail and that's okay. And in fact, if none of our pilots ever failed, we're probably not picking risky enough projects. And if the government is going to put taxpayer dollars into a pilots program, they ought to be doing things that aren't so readily successful that they could be done without government funds. So we have that expectation that some will fail. And again, that's okay. But we certainly hope that more succeed than fail. Part of our evaluation process every year is very much focused on what is your transition plan? What is your plan to no longer need federal dollars in order to function in this project? So it really isn't just about demonstrating something or about proving a model and then flipping the switch and shutting it off. It's about taking something, building it, and putting it into production. So, you know, our mantra is real users, real data, real activities, and real transactions. So if during your pilot period you can't demonstrate that you're going to be able to build the thing, put the thing out there, get real people using the thing and conducting real transactions, and then transition into a model that can persist. And that could be in a number of different ways. It could be because it's revenue generating, it's a commercial pilot of its own, or in these cases of states that there's a clear path towards either revenue generation that could sustain the business or that there's buy-in from in the budget for these states to be able to continue running these programs. But for us, it always is about making a permanent difference. We don't have a lot of interest in that sort of experimentation and then hope we figure out what to do with it later.
And have any of the pilots actually gone on to commercial production?
Most have at this point. Most actually reach commercial production while we're still under the period of performance with them as part of the grant. And we're always very happy to see that. That's such an important part for us. And we've seen, for instance, one of our earlier pilots was a company called ID.me. And they started off doing verification for veterans. For instance, if you went to Under Armour and Under Armour wants to give a discount to veterans, well, there's used to be very little way for them to prove that they're a veteran except sending in things like DD-214, which has all this sensitive information on it, and emailing it to someone at Under Armour to then apply your discount. Very, you know, kind of friction-oriented and problematic approach. And Under Armour doesn't want that personal information. They just want to give a discount to some veterans who have served our country. And so ID.me came along and said, okay, here's what we can do. We'll maintain that record of whether someone's a veteran, and we'll simply assert to all of these other companies that want to give you a discount that you are, in fact, a veteran. They trust us. We have agreements with them. And you trust us. You've proven to us that whether you're a vet or not. So they've expanded that to educators and first responders and things like that over the course of time. And they're growing quite rapidly right now and have had a lot of commercial success with a lot of major providers, Under Armour being one of them, with Major League Baseball, with SeaWorld, with a number of providers, and really are growing at a rapid pace. And recently was part of an award with the Department of Veterans Administration to be able to provide proofing for veterans for access to the portal for veteran services. So now we're seeing where the federal adoption is being affected by the work that we've done in the commercial space, which is one of the ultimate goals of this very much market-based approach that we've taken.
And what do you expect to do in 2017? What do the plans look like?
So we're going to continue a lot of our work on measurement, but 2017 has a couple other major foci for us. One, of course, is getting 863 out, which we think is, not only really going to help the way that agencies are doing identity management and digital authentication here in the federal government, but 863 gets picked up by a lot of other organizations privately and internationally. And 2017, one of the big things that we're going to focus on is internationalization. So a lot of people talk about, well, it'd be really great if we had interoperable identity internationally, and they start to think about, like, students that are going on exchange programs to the UK. Wow, wouldn't it be great if I could use my credentials there? And yes, that certainly would be great, but that's actually not where we think the big gain is. What we want to do is be able to create international harmony among international frameworks, such that if you're a multinational enterprise and you do work in the US and Canada and the EU and the UK, which may all have different approaches to doing some of this, if there's harmony amongst how you rate such an approach, for instance. So say that for identity proofing, we may require the following types of documents, and the UK may require a slightly separate set of documents. But if there's an intersection between those, such that you can say, well, we did the proofing in the UK and it reaches this level for an individual, and we also did it in the US and it reaches this level, those are comparable. What that does is it puts the enterprise in a position where their addressable market is much larger. They can have one process that meets the needs of multiple countries and all of the individuals within those countries. And so from our perspective, we think they're much more likely to meet those requirements and to raise the tide and to put everyone in a position where they have the incentive to do a better job of identity management. So we'll be very focused on internationalization from that perspective. Continuing to scale the pilots program, we've really kind of moved from those first few years of implementation of our strategy where we were about getting new technologies out there, getting things off the ground, trying to build this network of partners to really scaling those numbers. And like I said, we've tripled our numbers now and are closing in on the double digits of millions, which is certainly a plan for us for 2017. And again, advancing what we're doing in measurement science as well.
Mike Garcia is Program Manager of the National Strategy for Trusted Identities in Cyberspace at NIST. Listen to or download this interview at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights Identity Access Management Month, sponsored by SailPoint on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Identity Management.
Go beyond the PIV card and secure your agency with identity governance. Security doesn't stop at the front door. You need better visibility and governance over who has access to what systems and data in your agency. SailPoint, the leader in identity governance, helps your agency better mitigate risk and move it forward securely and confidently. Visit them at SailPoint.com to learn more. That's SailPoint.com. SailPoint, the power of identity.